Good morning. My name is Leslie, and I will be your conference operator for today. Participation in this conference call is strictly limited to invited participants. This call is exclusively for financial analysts and investors. If you are not an invited guest, please disconnect at this time. I would like to welcome you to the conference call on the report on economic activity, public finances, and public debt as of the third quarter of 2023. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a questions and answers session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, please press star 8 on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press star 8 again. I will now introduce you to the speakers. Rodrigo Mariscal Paredes, Head of the Economic Planning Unit at the Ministry of Finance, and Maria del Carmen Bonilla, Head of Public Credit and the International Affairs Unit at the Ministry of Finance, to proceed with their remarks. Please go ahead.
Hello, good morning, and thanks for joining us with this conference call. With me, it's Mari Carmen Bonilla, the Head of the Public Debt Management Unit. She will be commenting on debt and everything related to the issues of the Mexican. But before that, and proceeding to the questions, let me have some remarks on the global economy, the national economy, and some of the public financial results that we saw in the third quarter of 2023. So let me just start by saying that we've been surprised positively with respect to the outturns of many economies, the national economy, but also the U.S. economy, which is one of the main drivers of the Mexican foreign demand. Practically, the consumption has been the main driver, but also we have seen an important increase in investment, particularly in the Midwest, and these states are mostly or have been connected to Mexican export. The part of China, we've seen also positive surprises. They have a positive growth in the third quarter of 1.3%, and it's better than the previous one. However, the Eurozone has been not doing very well, but nevertheless, we are not very well connected relative to the trade, but more important to the financial part. Indicators anticipate that the recession might be not this year, or probably would be extended for beyond this year. Practically, the yield curve still inverted. However, it has approached to zero due to the increase in the long end of the curve. Basically, if the slope increase had come from the short end, it would have been a sign of recession. But because it is implied in the interest rate cuts that were expected soon, the inflation risks to the outlook are still there. We see some structural risk over the inflation. Practically, geopolitical conflicts keep adding pressure to the inflation outlook, and we have seen some climate issues related to that keep hitting the economy overall. Oil prices are increasing relative to what we have the previous year. Gasoline prices as well. And one positive outcome that we have seen related to the gasoline prices is that the compression in the crack spread that affects the excise tax that we collect, and practically these crack spreads have been reducing over the course of the year. However, agricultural prices are still lower than last year's, but they are stable around a high level relative to what we historically have seen. As I was mentioning, climate shocks such as El Niño and droughts and export restriction policies have created volatility and pressures on practically the basic food basket. In terms of the monetary policy, we have seen some heterogeneity basically across the globe, but mainly through the emerging markets. Some of the emerging market economies, and in particular in Latin America, have been starting to ease its period of tightening. But we need to realize that many of these economies start raising rates before the Fed. Now, let me go to the Mexican economy and make some remarks about it. Today, it was published the third quarter GDP flash estimate at 3.3% on a year-on-year growth, and 0.9% quarterly. This is very close to what we were expecting at the beginning of the year, and we think that we are going to be very close to what we expect, a growth rate of 3% or even above. Now, most of this growth is coming from the domestic demand. We have seen a very strong labor market. Participation remains at historical heights, and this is something that we have not seen since 2012. Basically, the participation rate is close to 60%. And this is in the context of a very low unemployment rate levels. High employment in job creation, basically the formal employment during the year has been quite good. There has been 757,000 job creation just from January to September, and practically the unemployment rate and the availability, it's very low relative to historical levels. These very good outcomes in the labor market has been supportive of the private consumption, which has been growing on a year-to-date basis at 2.7%. We have seen also the very good numbers in terms of the consumer confidence. Practically, we are hitting an all-time high relative to other levels of before, and the consumer credit is still growing at positive rates despite an environment of high interest rates. The real wage bill is also increasing very high in a double digit, but we need to emphasize that some of this wage bill growth is related to some of the demand that we have seen in the northern part of Mexico and the manufacturing associated with the export side of the manufacturing. Now, the private and public investment are increasing and practically is the main driver of the growth now. Several signs indicate that this could be an increase in the potential GDP growth. From the supply side, the economy shows that Mexico's productive capacity is increasing. One important comment that I would want to say is the construction boom that we have been seeing over the country. Practically, the construction sector is increasing at double digits. From January to August, the construction sector has increased 22% on a year to date, and this investment is important to note that this investment is most driven in the non-residential part, which when you estimate or when we look at the numbers from January to July, the growth rate of this is close to 47%. The construction investment is also mainly driven by the private sector, but also some part of the public sector, but this is mostly located in the southern part of Mexico. We see an increase in the construction material requirements. We see a lot of import demand, especially from the capital goods. It's basically related to tools, construction, and machinery for construction, and also the employment in the free zone border in the northern parts of Mexico has been performing quite good. Some more figures that I would like to share with you is some of the projects that this year or partially on the next year are going to be deployed from the public infrastructure. Basically, 1.1 thousand kilometers of new highways. These are going to be displayed in Puebla and Monterrey and other parts of the country. 9 million square meters of storage capacity in ports. The Maya Train and the Istmo Corridor would add 2,000 kilometers of railroads, and the Istmo Corridor is going to be reducing the time in travel between the Pacific and the Gulf of Mexico by 70%. The Dos Bocas refinery, we estimate that they are going to be starting producing next year close to 300,000 barrels of gasoline per day, and we will also add to the energy generation capacity infrastructure, the Puerto Peñasco photovoltaic plant that is going to be producing close to 5 gigawatts. Now let me just make some brief comments about the reflection on whether the economy is becoming overheated or not. I know that some people have making some remarks particularly related to the budget of 2024. So we really think that this is not the case, and just let me give you some remarks why we think it's not the case. So practically, the GDP, if you estimate the pre-pandemic trend relative to what we had before the pandemic, we are currently at 7.1% below this trend, and 2% if one takes the full sample trend. So that indicates that there's still some capacity that could catch up with what we had before. The manufacturing installed capacity as of August from the local production is very different from the export production part. Basically, the local manufacturing, it's running at 73% of capacity, while its historic maximum amount that they have reached is close to 78%. While the export capacity production from the exporting manufacturing, it's running at 87% with a comparison of the maximum amount close to 90% of capacity. So you see there's some capacity, especially from the local market, that has not been used so far. Inflation keeps cooling down, measured both by the CPI and the PPI. The CPI has been consistently lower every month, and the PPI actually has been showing some deflation in some months. So this is clearly in contrast with the U.S. that people tend to tag along with Mexican conditions, which is currently not the case. Now, another comment. So we have seen that basically when the Mexican economy is really overheated, we see an important amount of current account deficit, which is not the case now. Basically, if you take the periods where the economy is running above trend, the current account deficit has a deficit beyond or at least some closer to 2% of GDP. And when the economy is cooling down and is running below trend, the current account deficit is close to 1% of GDP. While as the second quarter of 2023, the current account deficit, it's close to 1.1%. Now, an important part of this, we need to remind you that there has been a lot of import demand from imports of capital goods, which is something that it's also different from other periods that you could possibly argue that this is overheated. Now, let me go out, do some remarks on the public financial results that we have seen in the third quarter. So the public sector revenues have been affected by the exchange rate appreciation. We have been reporting these figures before. The third quarter revenues expenditure figures align with the estimates that we present in 2023 package. So despite the lower revenues, we still think that we are going to be close to what we set in the criterias generales de política económica. The public sector revenues 2023 is the first year that we have been affected both by the peso and the drop in oil prices. More importantly, they have been below last year's figures and below what we have set in the program. Historically, we have seen these two shocks that cancel each other out, but now in this year we have seen these two shocks go in the same directions. Oil revenue have also been affected by the impact on the VAT revenues. Practically oil revenues in September are 217 pesos below the program, slightly above our estimate of 190 billion of the program, which you can close that gap because we have seen a higher oil prices recently. But nevertheless, despite the higher oil prices, most of the year we have seen prices below what we were expecting in the program. Now, there is some this redistribution of oil revenues. Pemex have received more revenue, oil revenues or most of the windfall than the federal government. This is not used to be the case. But now they are practically receiving most of the windfall. Now, tax revenues are also affected by the exchange rate, but this is partially offset by the performance of the taxes, especially the corporate income tax and the personal income tax, that are most closely with economic activity. However, the tax revenue are still below the program, although they are growing quite high relative to what we have in 2022. The VIT revenues are below, and this is one of the main drivers of the lower tax revenues. And again, as I was saying, this is partially compensated by the corporate income tax and the personal income tax and some state-owned companies' revenues and non-tax revenues. The public sector spending, we can say that we are striving to increase priority spending in real terms while making the necessary adjustment to accommodate revenues reductions and keep the balances in line with the program. The total net expenditure is below 221 billion pesos relative to the program, and the programmable expenditure is lower by 129 billion pesos. Most of the factors that are pushing this lower expenditure comes from wages that are 58 billion pesos below, and physical investment that is 211 billion pesos below the program. Social protections, again, I mean, it's a little bit lower by 36 billion. And non-programmable expenditure, which is mostly related to the financial cost and other expenses, by 92 billion below the program. And one remark that I would want to stress is the financial cost increase are contained despite that the interest rate are higher than we were expecting in the program, practically by 14 billion pesos below what we expect in the program. And that is something important, because if you just implied or set the implied elasticity that would have been if you take the difference between what we set in the program with the interest rate and what was seen so far, we would have had a cost of 70 billion pesos. Now, in terms of the public balances, we can say that the balances are on a stable trajectory and in line with what we have estimated in the package of 2024. The public and private balances would probably be outperforming the 2023 program. The public balance would be 645 billion pesos below. That means that we are expecting a lower deficit, and the primary balances would be 112 billion pesos above. So we will have a higher superavit surplus. Although we estimate a deficit reduction for the year, so we estimate a deficit reduction for the end of the year from 3.5% of GDP to 3.3%, and the overall public sector debt, we expect a lower debt by the end of the year from 48.7 to 46.5. So that's close to 2.2 percentage points below. Now, let me make some remarks regarding to what has happened in Mexico related to the Hurricane Otis and the impact on public finances, and a little bit of comments on what we are expecting, although this is very soon, on the economic activity for what would happen for this disaster. Now, in terms of the ways that we are dealing with the disaster, first we need to say that we have the trust fund that has 13 billion pesos available for 2023 and 18 billion pesos for 2024. These resources can be used in like a first defense mechanism. There's an advantage of this mechanism what we have in the past. And we also have some catastrophic insurance of the number of 5 billion pesos available to restore infrastructure such as hospital, roads, schools and facilities. And also we have a bond, a disaster bond for $485 million. And the important part of that is that for this natural disaster, which is hurricanes in the Pacific, we have an allocation of $125 billion. We're still exploring the way that we would deploy these resources and how much we were going to get from the metrics that this bond have attached to it. Now, the fiscal measures, probably you have seen the decree that was published yesterday. For the fiscal measures, at least for this year, and this I will need to stress that this could be extended for the next year, but at least for this year, we are going to be having investment for restoration and rehabilitation made during the final quarter of 2023 would be an immediately deducted 100% of the investment in assets. And we're going to be having a deferral of VAT payments, the excise tax on gasoline, and the tax withholdings for wages and salaries. There's going to be no provisional income tax payments for 2023, at least the last bimester, and some administrative facilities for the VAT returns for the primary sector. Moreover, some complementary plans and humanitarian aid are on their way. The CNBV, which is the Banking Regulatory Agency, have published some special guidelines to allow victims to postpone loan payments and freeze their balances for 6 months. Insurance companies' agreement to pay 40% of insured amount without formalities or affected business. And in conjunction with the Central Bank, we have deployed the Plan Billetes, which is an access to cash for affected households in collaboration with Bankercito and other banking associations, two customer services models that have been installed to allow people to withdraw cash and bank cards with their bank cards without fees, and some multilateral support of grants of something close to $1 million US dollars. Now, let me stop here, and perhaps I should make some remarks about what we have seen so far or what we estimated would be the impact for the Mexican economic activity regarding to the hurricane. So basically what we think is that this is going to be a minor effect for the overall economy because first the Guerrero state participates or it's sharing the GDP is very low, it's close to 1.3% in terms of the GDP and 2.7% in terms of the employment, and out of that 40% it's related to the tourism. And most of the tourism, although it's a state that it's mainly driven tourist state, it doesn't represent too much relative to the overall tourism GDP. It's close to 2% of the tourism GDP. And most of this tourism is national. 76% of the tourists come from within the country. And only 1% of overall tourism comes from abroad relative to the country. For the agricultural production that the state has, it's basically corn and fishing activities, and the corn only amounts for 5% of the country production. So it's something that is not really big relative to the overall. Now, in terms of the forward and backward linkages that the state has with other states, we can say that they don't really have a very close linkages with buying from other states. They basically buy from the state of Mexico, Puebla, and Nuevo León, and this is, has to be with they buy from the Mexican city and the state of Mexico and Hidalgo, and basically they buy electricity, water, and transportation services, while they provide services for Puebla and Nuevo León in terms of the and other states of the country in terms of the tourism services and commerce. In relative terms to the remittances, they are an important state. They receive 5% of the remittances that are coming to Mexico, which we think that they are not going to be interrupted with regard to this tragedy, and we are making an effort so that the financial system and the store where they receive the remittances would be available for them just to keep receiving remittances from them. We have not received, or we have not know that if they are going to be having more remittances than they normally have because of this event, but we will keep monitoring how the things are going to be unfolding. So let me just stop here and let Mari Carmen give some remarks regarding to the debt.
Thank you, Rodrigo. Good morning, everyone. I will share the main results of debt management policy during the third quarter of 2023. First, I would like to reassert that the main objective of the federal government is to maintain public debt in a sustainable downward path as a percentage of GDP. having a responsible, transparent, and efficient management. We are continuously engaging in strategies to improve our maturity profile, reduce the refinancing risk, and seek cost-efficient transactions. In this regard, I will now summarize the main actions contained in the report. Regarding domestic debt, during the third quarter of 2023, the Ministry of Finance actively sought opportunities and strategies to improve the debt portfolio metrics. Regarding the local debt, the federal government continued with an intensive refinancing effort, executing the following operations. On August 17, we did a syndicated auction for the new five-year MBONO benchmark for a total amount of 13 billion pesos with a 9.37% rate. The transaction demand was 1.04 times the allocated amount, and 27 investors participated. 70% of those participants were bank and government treasury departments. On July 7, a refinancing transaction was executed through an exchange of government securities carried out in two trades. The first one, 132 billion pesos of debt, was canceled out by the buyback of M-bonos and UDI-bonos maturing between 23 and 2025. And the second one was 144 billion pesos of government securities that were issued with maturities between 2025 and 2053. These type of operations have a very important impact on the portfolio. I will show you the metrics, to the extent that right now we feel pretty much comfortable on where is our average tenor and the maturities of all the mix we have in the local portfolio. On July 20, a new sustainable bond at fixed rate was issued, the sustainable fixed bond. This instrument will encourage public and private institutions to issue their own thematic securities, which consolidate Mexico as the largest ESG corporate bond market in Latin America. The fixed sustainable bond was issued in Mexican pesos with a 12-year maturity, a fixed coupon of 8% and an 8.85% yield. We decided to go through a 12-year tenor just because we are thinking of reopenings, considering what we have on the budget, budgetary lines related on this type of instruments. And as you know, these instruments are aligned with the framework that we use to issue in the international markets. As a result of this transaction, the Minister of Finance compromises on giving an account of budgetary expenditure directed to sustainable projects, which reflects our commitment with transparency and responsible investments. This issuance was very well received as well from international investors. Around 50% of the allocation were done to international investors and the remaining on the local markets. It is also important to state that these transactions are in compliance with the debt ceilings approved by the Mexican government for the fiscal year 2023. Regarding foreign debt, in the third quarter, there were no bond issuances in international markets as part of the compromise of using foreign borrowing as a complementary source of financing, and also due to the volatility we have seen in international markets, especially on the treasury markets. We will keep on using this tool only if there are favorable conditions for the federal government. Nevertheless, in the present year, with the objective of continuing with the improvement of the foreign debt maturities profile, we carried out two transactions for a total amount of around $7 billion, which benefited and consolidated the sustainable yield curve in the dollar market. Moreover, new benchmark bonds were placed and the participation of investors from America, Europe, Asia, and other geographies was increased. Regarding liability management transactions, I would like to mention that as of the third quarter of 2023, the government has refinanced throughout this year 452 billion pesos of internal debt. This was mainly due to the amortization profile we had As you know, these securities were issued a long time ago and were not incorporated in previous administrations liability management operations. Therefore, we had to make a strong effort to try to tackle these amortization towers and try to pull them forward, being consistent with the trajectory path and cost we have on the portfolio. During the entire administration, a total of $14.6 billion were done in international markets, and 1.7 trillion pesos of local debt were refinanced so far. As I mentioned previously, we feel pretty much comfortable with the portfolio as we have it right now. Of course, we're going to monitor the markets, and if there is any space or chance to enhance the portfolio, especially the local one, we are going to perform any other transaction. Regarding investor base, debt policy has sought to broaden the investor's base by diversifying the markets and sources of financing, and also incorporated issuances based on sovereign bonds, especially those linked to the SDGs. Some other metrics that I would like to let you know. In the third quarter, the PSBRs stood at 45.4 of GDP. The domestic debt represented 33.7 of GDP, and external debt 11.7% of GDP. Regarding the public sector net debt, which includes the net debt of the federal government plus the state-owned companies and development banks, this figure was 45.7 percentage points of GDP at the end of the third quarter of 2023. Domestic debt represented 33.9 percentage points of GDP, and external debt 11.8 percentage points of GDP. As you can see, There is a very, very small change between one and the other, and this is showing consistency in the metrics we have on the portfolio. Lastly, the federal government's net debt was 38.5 percentage points of GDP at the end of this quarter. The domestic component of this net debt represents 32.1 percentage points of GDP, and the external component represented 6.4 percentage points of GDP. Regarding risk metrics, as per the third quarter of 2023, the debt portfolio maintains healthy risk indicators. I will mention a couple of them. Currency risks remain low, with only 16.7% of the federal government net debt being denominated in foreign currency and 83.3% denominated in domestic currency. Additionally, refinancing risk stands at a low level since the average maturity of foreign market debt is 20.1 years, and the average maturity of domestic market debt is 7.8 years, which shows an upward path since it stood at 7.3 years in 2021. And this is a reflection of the liability management transactions we have been conducting recently. Lastly, interest rate risk is also limited, given that 76.8% of domestic market debt is at long term and at fixed nominal and real rates, while 100% of the external market debt is at fixed rates. Thank you for your attention, and I will pass the floor to Rodrigo to start the Q&A.